Now, let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about and addressing a very serious issue today on this broadcast, an issue that every Christian ought to be concerned about and every Christian and conservative ought to be involved in, the speaking out and warning our nation of where we're going. We're talking about political jihad, and I'm calling it the 2020 Islamic invasion. The 2020 Islamic invasion. But the Council on American Islamic Relations are anxious to put about 30 in the U.S. House and the Senate and about 5,200 across America in local, state, city, and state, and county, and federal offices across America. I believe we have a call on the line. Go with your question and comment, please.
Yeah, good afternoon. Very interesting program as usual. When I speak to Muslims, when I spoke to the Muslims in the past, and there were about five or six at one time, sometimes seven, eight, nine, ten, if any of those particular Muslims were interested in what I had to say and we would have a dialogue, generally there was one or two that were more radical, and they got the other people that seemed to be interested to shut up. So there's a great fear amongst the moderate Muslims that do interpret the Quran in a more sane way. They don't take it as literal. Now, one paragraph I'll read real quickly. Moderate Muslims who seek to remake Islam in their own image or in the image of, say, a politically castrated Catholicism in France have found little success in the Islamic community. They have rather incurred the wrath of the faithful. In fact, it has cost many of them their freedom or their lives. In this context, the influential fundamentalist sheikh, the late Muhammad al-Ghazali, has ruled in a notorious fatwa that every Muslim who pleads for the separation of religion and politics, that is, for the suspension of the Sharia, is to be branded as a myrtle apostate. He also stated that any Muslim who kills these apostates should not be punished because they were doing a service to Allah. This resulted in intellectuals being murdered in Egypt, Algeria, Syria, and the Challenge of Fundamentalism, page 169. A fatwa, of course, is a legal decision or sentence issued by a religious leader or scholar. And also, I'm sure, Brother Youngblood, you've heard of the Moors. They were North African Muslims that when they migrated south to Spain, there was a golden age for about three centuries where Jews, Christians, and Muslims did get along well, until the more radical element came and eliminated everyone there. But you've heard of the Moors, have you not?
Yes, yes. There was that, as you said, a brief respite. I could equate that very simply to the fact that you go back to globally, 88% of Islamics, Muslims, are illiterate, 88%. They do not read, cannot read the Quran if they had one in their hands. They believe simply what the mullahs and the imams are telling them. And so as a result of that, we're finding today the imams are the ones that are promulgating and pushing and prompting the Sharia law, prompting and pushing death for America and Americans and for Jews and Israelis. We're finding that, by the way, you touched on the word radical. If we talk about a radical Christian, we're talking about one that believes the word, lives the word, teaches the word. And so that would be what I would call a normal Christian. So when we say radicalization, generally speaking, from the fake news and for the left-wing politics and the politicians, when they say radical, they say, well, he must have been radicalized. He went here. He's been introduced to the word of what is said in the Quran about Sharia law and about jihad. And by the way, the noble Quran is the only one with the blue seals in it from the University of Medina. It is the only one that's recognized by the Islamic scholars. And in that, when it talks about jihad, it talks about holy war against the non-Muslim. So jihad is, in fact, holy war. In fact, in the 2006 final report by the FBI studying the question, what caused 9/11? The report was finally out in 2006. And I'll paraphrase because they do not have the quote before me, but the FBI paraphrased in the quote from them, they wanted to know the question, what caused 9/11? And the end result in their elongated study was they read, believed, and carried out what was said in the Quran. And yet we have those that think that somehow, some way, the Quran is equal to the Bible and that Allah is equal to God, and that is simply not true at all. But going back to your statement, yes, one that does not follow the Quran in the realm of Sharia law and in jihad, they're viewed as an apostate and are put to death. Now, let's do some comparison there. We have a lot of folks who claim to be saved today. They never read the Bible. They never practice Christianity. They don't know what the Word of God says in relationship to life and living. And you'll find that's true in Islam also. And they just simply believe what they're told.
Right. Well, thank you very much. And shalom.
Thank you. God bless you. Thank you for your call. And ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about a very serious subject today. Most never talk about it. Most are afraid to speak out against it and say anything about it. Therefore, many will just simply slide under the rock in silence. But we're talking about Islamic jihad. We're talking about political jihad and the 2020 Islamic invasion. And they're planning on doing that by political jihad and educational jihad, where they will take control of the American jurisprudence system, the American political system, and they're doing so, ladies and gentlemen, today via the textbooks that are absolutely talking about Islam, our schools, our public education, talking about the school system and what they're teaching our students in school today. Five times more about Islam is said in those textbooks than about Christianity and Judaism combined. Today, America is on the fast track, ladies and gentlemen, toward Islamic control. Islamic jihad does not mean open warfare, as is the ultimate jihad intent against a nation and a takeover. There are three different jihads, ladies and gentlemen. I have covered these before on a similar broadcast, but I believe we need to understand this to get the fundamental foundation of what is happening today. First of all, is silent jihad. Silent jihad. That's where Islamics will enter into a city, state, or nation. They will be silent. They will be compliant. They will act the part, look the part, act like good citizens until they have between 3% and 6% of the Islamic population. Then they will rise up and make demands for special food, for special exceptions, for special recognition. Today, ladies and gentlemen, that's the reason in most every international airport in America today, we have special Islamic prayer rooms where they have foot basins to wash their feet and prayer rugs to fall down on, and that's paid for by U.S. taxpayers. If you don't believe it, examine it. If you don't believe it, research it. And that's called silent jihad, where little by little, we are giving in, giving over, and allowing the Islamics to control in the city, state, and nation they enter. Secondly is the educational jihad, and it's through the school system. And that's the place, ladies and gentlemen. I just watched a portion of a video this morning, and it was put on by a female Islamic, and it says Islam will convert America to Islam via the public school system. Ladies and gentlemen, through the public school system today, the educational materials and the textbooks, Islam will indoctrinate the students so as to cause Islamic belief to become a part and parcel of the student's life, and therefore that student will influence the families, and the families will then be influenced in their communities and neighborhoods for full acceptance on Islam and Islamic belief. Today, American educational system is filled, not just in the elementary school and the junior high and the high school, but ladies and gentlemen, every major public university in America today has a department of Islamic studies. You might ask the question, how did that come about? It's because between $50 million and $350 million has been given by the Islamic jihadists out of Dubai, out of Saudi Arabia, and out of other major Islamic centers. It's donated money to these universities so that they will set up a department of Islamic studies. University of North Florida, ladies and gentlemen, has a department of Islamic studies. How did that come about? It's because the acceptance of about $50 million. Check it out. Google it. Call. Research it. About $50 million was donated for that center to be set up right here in our city in a state-funded university, University of North Florida. And that's all over America, ladies and gentlemen. And in some of the universities, Harvard University ceased to teach the Constitution as fact and require students to take constitutional law or something about the Constitution, because now they have been sold out to Islamic jihadists to have a Department of Islamic Studies that dominates what's taught at Harvard University today, ladies and gentlemen. It's by the hundreds of millions of dollars, the mega millions that's donated to our schools and colleges and universities, and they have full departments of Islamic indoctrination. And ladies and gentlemen, if you don't believe that's true, just examine it. And I find that it's antithetical to truth for someone to simply say, I don't believe it, out of hand, and not listen to the warning signs and the dangers. Not only do we have the silent jihad and the educational jihad, but ladies and gentlemen, side by side with that, simultaneously taking place around the globe, political jihad. This is where we are today, I believe. We are allowing Islamics to run and be elected in political offices across America. We see Ilhan Omar. We look at Rashid Tlaib. Both these women hate America. They hate the Constitution. They have absolutely castigated President Trump for his taking out, neutralizing the General Salami that was a major, major part of the terrorist organization around the globe. They have called our president everything but a sane white man as a result of his being bold enough to do what was right and necessary to protect American lives abroad and in America. Ladies and gentlemen, it is taking place through the public educational system, also in the political system. But I find it almost unbelievable when I read an article that says U.S. public school teacher threatens Muslim girl for taking off hijab, head covering. A teacher in the U.S. public school threatened to out her student, a young Muslim girl, who chose to take off her hijab. The teacher noticed the girl had removed it and asked her about it after class. She then told the girl that she would tell her parents if she didn't start wearing it again. Now, I'm talking about an American school. I'm talking about with a public school system where a teacher takes the part in the side of Islam and threatens to call the girl's mother and tell the mother that she's no longer wearing her head covering. This article says the story is chilling. Here's the story in her own words. And ladies and gentlemen, it's two full pages of the young student's testimony about what had happened. She said, I'll just read you a part of it. So today I was happy. I had completely stopped covering my hair and was talking confidently with other people. I was so joyful. I wanted to go home and dream about it at night. Then in math class, when the bell rang to switch classes, a teacher asked me about my hijab. I told her that I just took it off and it was no big deal. She then told me that it was important to uphold culture and Islamic belief and asked if my parents knew about it. Being the idiot I am, I said no and asked if she would tell. To my absolute horror, the teacher said, yes, I will tell your parents. This young lady said, my whole world stopped. I asked her why she would do this to me. She said, because it's your culture, and you were given an advantage to be able to wear your hijab as a uniform, so don't just take advantage of it. And she goes on and on, ladies and gentlemen. Again, I say it's a two-full-page narrative with the dialogue and the discussion. But where a United States of America public school system teacher will threaten a Islamic girl because the Islamic girl is trying to shed the hijab and trying to look and act normal and become a normal U.S. citizen, she's ridiculed, demeaned, and threatened to be outed to her parents. That's part of what you see in the indoctrinational factor in the educational system. And it's bad enough in the silent jihad or the educational jihad, but ladies and gentlemen, I think it's horrific when you find that in the American political system. Now, here's this Ilhan Omar that is from Minnesota. Minnesota's the place where President Donald J. Trump dumped, and I use that term literally, thousands of Islamics when they were brought into America, transported at night across America, dumped into major cities and states across America to change them culturally, politically, societally to Islamic belief and embrace Islam. Here's an article that says Ilhan Omar admits she will never assimilate. Ilhan Omar admits that she will not assimilate. Ilhan Omar will not respect American culture. Respecting American culture is a silly comment, she says. Omar claims that there is no need to assimilate, quote, because being an American simply means being myself, end quote. One of the things that you'll find, ladies and gentlemen, around the globe is that Islam will come into a city, state, county, or nation. They will segregate and segment themselves into clans and groups and into areas of the city and town and states, will not assimilate. They will stay to themselves. They will continue in their study of the Quran and perpetuating what they believe and bringing it into society in which they live in. Ladies and gentlemen, Rashid Tlaib and others literally hate America. They wish for America to be overthrown. These Islamics in the United States House and Senate were sworn in on the Quran, not on the Bible, not on the Word of God, but on the demonic, evil book called the Quran, because their allegiance is not to America, but to Allah. Their allegiance is not to the Word of God, but the Quran. Their allegiance is not to God or the U.S. Constitution, but to Allah and the Quran. Ladies and gentlemen, the U.S. House via Nancy Pelosi changed the House rules. I don't know if you're aware of this or not. For over 100 years, in fact, I believe it's 125, 150, but I'm just using the term over 100 years, it was the rule of the House and the Senate that you wear no head covering. Men could not wear hats. Women could not wear scarves or head coverings. That was summarily changed quickly, quietly, through the House rules promulgated by the socialist, Marxist, Democrat, Nancy Pelosi, and the other House leaders, that removed that requirement so that Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib could wear their head coverings, donning their view of the Islamic life and basically thumbing their nose at American life and American culture. Ladies and gentlemen, these Islamic jihadist politicians now able to wear the head coverings in Congress. But ladies and gentlemen, today across America, we see cities that are allowing Islamic patrol cars to cruise the streets just as law enforcement officials. Here's an article, ladies and gentlemen, that says Muslims dressed like cops now driving fake cop cars patrolling American cities. Muslims in New York are now patrolling the city dressed like cops while driving fake cop cars. Reports show that the cars from the Muslim group called the Muslim Community Patrol have been spotted around the city, joining the Jewish enclaves and the Brooklyn Patrol among New York's cultural specific security guards. The white Ford Taurus bears insignias nearly identical to those of the NYPD police cars and patrol cars, with blue horizontal stripes down the side, a shield on the front driver's side of the door with words that says Muslim Community Patrol, end quote. Instead of NYPD spelled out on the front door, the vehicle has the letters MPC, writing Muslim Patrol Community Patrol. Ladies and gentlemen, that is political jihad. That is political jihad. That is frightening to me to see this taking place, and it's expanding into other cities and states where you have large dominance of Islamic people. Here's the article. Here's another article on that subject. Brooklyn Muslim Police Patrol confronted by infamous blood gangs. Blue uniform officers of so-called Muslim Community Patrol have been driving cars identical to the New York Police Department cruisers to enforce Sharia law, Islamic law, in Brooklyn neighborhoods. Hear that? They're allowing them to enforce. That means by police officers called the Muslim Community Police Patrol to enforce Islamic law, Sharia law, in the Brooklyn neighborhoods. 1 week ago, however, a patrol was confronted by members of the notorious Bloods gang in front of a Brooklyn mosque. The Clarion Project said the conflict began December the 10th when the teenage boy allegedly disrespected a Muslim woman outside the mosque. the boy did not touch the woman, bystanders say. He did speak to her. A Muslim patrol member grabbed the teen boy by the collar, threw him against the gate of the mosque. While the boy was pressed firmly against the fence, the Muslim patrol member held him by the neck and lectured him. After the rebuke, the boy complained to his father, which happened to be a senior member of the local Bloods gang. The father mobilized six other Blood members to join him and went to the mosque and confronted the Muslim community patrol. Ladies and gentlemen, we're watching the conversion of America to Islamic thought. And here's a frightening thought further on that subject, ladies and gentlemen. Here's an article that says, Muslim Patrol, new bill could fund Islamic vigilante groups. A new bipartisan bill designed to protect houses of worship may inadvertently empower Islamic vigilante groups like the New York Muslim Patrol. While well-meaning, consider the escalating attacks on places of worship in America, the Protecting Faith and Nonprofit Organization from Terrorism Act, which would allocate $75 million of Homeland Security funds, is severely flawed. As pointed out by Islamic Watch, the bill not only fails to adequately limit how much grant money can be spent, it provides funding for nonprofit organizations as well. This means that Islamics and other extremist organizations with links to terror funding, intimidating, and religious bullying could be eligible for government funds called security funds. Clarion Project recently reported on how some members of the Muslim Patrol essentially act as Islamic vigilante groups in Brooklyn while driving cars, patrol cars, that look like New York Police Department. Roughed up a son of an original member of the Bloods gang. Here's another article, ladies and gentlemen, says, Iranian with machete, a pickaxe, and knives, packing serious crash arrested near Trump's Florida home. Iranian with machete, pickaxe, and knives, and packing serious cash, arrested near Trump's home in Florida. It's a massive article, but it talks about, ladies and gentlemen, the dangers and points out and accentuates the dangers of Islam, United States of America, and we're allowing that to come in. We're sitting in silence. Here's an article, ladies and gentlemen, that talks about what happened in Australia with the Muslims. Keep in mind, in Australia, a Muslim can live there, become a citizen there, but he cannot run for public office in Australia. Here's an article that says, Muslim charged for starting the Australian fires laughs after a court hearing. About, ladies and gentlemen, about 25 million acres have been burned in Australia. About 3 dozen people have died, and about 1 billion animals have been incinerated in the fires. And yet, they have discovered now that two Muslims, a Muslim teen who was accused of with his brother of starting the fires in Australia, was seen laughing as he left the court in Sydney, Australia on Tuesday. The two brothers, 18 years old, allegedly set off fireworks that started a grass fire at the park near Sydney on December the 22nd. On Monday, the New South Wales police force announced it had arrested 24 people who deliberately started the catastrophic fires that have ravaged many parts of the country. Ladies and gentlemen, that's as a result of Islamic hatred. In fact, some have said, and I believe that you can go back and Google it, discover that some of the major fires we've had on the West Coast in the past several years were started by Islamics. Here's an article that should cause you to sit up and take notice, ladies and gentlemen. The title of the article is Creeping Sharia. Now, the word Sharia simply means Islamic law. It simply means Quranic law. And ladies and gentlemen, ALAC, the American Laws for American Courts, have been introduced in the states across America. The state of Florida tried to pass that bill 3 years, and Islamic invasion, Islamic intrusion, Islamic lobbyists paying off the Democrats in Tallahassee prevented it from being passed. ALAC, American Laws for American Courts, would prevent Sharia law from being the determining factor for a judge to make a decision on a case. This article says, Creeping Sharia, documented news on the threat of Islamic Sharia law and jihad to the freedom of the United States of America and beyond. Virginia, Dateline Virginia, Somalia Muslim FBI translator charged after his own voice was intercepted on terror surveillance calls. The FBI employed a contractor, a Muslim contractor, even though his adult children had been placed on the no-fly list and denied reentering the United States back in 2010. And yet this particular FBI agent, hired FBI agent, Islamic FBI agent, was subjected to international news coverage in the summer of 2010 when he said that they were unfairly placed on the no-fly list with his family going back to Yemen and Saudi Arabia. This is Dateline now, December the 31st, 2019. After a delay of several weeks of pressure from the Muslim civil rights group, the CARE, Council on American Islamic Relations, the brothers were allowed to return to the U.S. later that summer. But in 2017, this man was arrested and sentenced to 10 years in prison for allegedly transporting high-powered weapons in a case where he spoke with an undercover witness about his desire to shoot up an American military recruitment center on behalf of the Islamic State. A former FBI translator, Islamic FBI translator, ladies and gentlemen, accused of covering up the personal contact with the terrorism suspect, has now pleaded guilty to making false statements. Ladies and gentlemen, here's an article that says Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison accuser of the innocent defender of the guilt. And he goes on to talk about what he has done and who he is as an Islamic Attorney General for the state of Michigan, ladies and gentlemen, or the Minnesota, that is. We need to be concerned about what is taking place in the United States of America. And as Christians ask the question, can a good Muslim be a good American? And I think it's an impossibility. Anish Shiro wrote a book back in the 70s, and he gave this illustration. Theologically, he cannot. His allegiance is to Allah and the moon god of Arabia. Religiously, no, for his religion accepts no religion except Allah and the Quran. Scripturally, no, his allegiance is to the five pillars of Islam and not the Quran. Geographically, no, his allegiance is to Mecca and he turns and prays five times a day. Socially, no, his allegiance is to Islam and it forbids him to be honestly have friends with Christians or Jews. And I could go on and on, but finally it says politically, no, he must submit to the mullahs and spiritual leaders with the teaching of annihilation of Israel and the destruction of America, who is the great Satan. Ladies and gentlemen, I must warn us as a nation that we're in danger with political jihad. We're in danger, especially this election year, with the Islamic invasion for 2020. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us today. Looking forward to meeting you once again on the air as we face the issues.
Been listening to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood, pastor of First Conservative Baptist Church and president of Conservative Theological University, 120 21 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, located just 1 mile south of I-295. You are invited to worship with them 9:30 a.m. Sunday for Bible study, 10:45 a.m. Sunday morning worship service, 7 p.m. Sunday evening worship service, or 7 p.m. Wednesday fellowship meal Bible study. Prayer, Bible Q&A, and updates on issues facing our city, state, and country. Tune in again for another Let's Face the Issues broadcast. Also tune in this same station Saturday mornings at 9 for expository Bible preaching by Dr. Youngblood. Remember, a rebroadcast of this program can be heard every evening, 9 p.m. on 100.3 FM. Tune in and invite others to listen.